This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Scotland Outdoors Podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
Hello and thanks very much for choosing to listen to this. I'm Mark Stephen. The Scotland Outdoors podcast is built from a live programme we do for BBC Radio Scotland called Out of Doors. And this week, because it's Mental Health Awareness Week, we kind of majored on that. Okay, here's the situation, right? Across there, cherry tree, white blossom. Across there, cherry tree, white blossom. Down there, cherry tree, pink blossom. Birds are singing. There is literally a grey squirrel hopping across the path. So you'd think, this is spring, stroke summer. No, I've got the fire on, and I need the fire on. It is flipping freezing this morning. I'm Mark Stephen, coming to you live from the BBC Aberdeen car park. Joining me this morning from Bampshire, Mr. Ewan McElrath.
Well, I was going to moan about the weather, but you've been whinging on. I'm just going to leave that. You can email outofdoors@bbc.co.uk or give Lewis a call. He's on 08 085 9295 00.
Lewis or Finlay, his young protégé, who's on the phones this morning. So you could get either of them. It's a lucky dip on the programme this morning. All this week, BBC Radio Scotland's been reflecting Mental Health Awareness Week, the theme of which really this year is nature, which is perfect for us.
Yeah, we'll be finding out how spending... We know this already, but how spending time outdoors, enjoying nature, can have an uplifting impact on your mental well-being.
And also hearing from folk who have just basically embraced new hobbies, or indeed habits, that have helped them overcome struggles with things like anxiety.
And as we all know, bird watching is just a great way to take some of the stress out of your modern life. But we're going to put stress back in with the mystery bird. See if you can guess what this is. Frankly, I would say that's too easy. Mm-hmm. But if you know what that is, email outofdoors@bbc.co.uk, text 80295 or phone Lewis and Finlay, 08 085 9295 00.
We just like to vary the nature of the complaints. You know, in the last few weeks, there have been complaints that have been too difficult. This week, there'll be complaints that's too easy. Earlier this week, Laura Guthrie headed to Templeton Woods on the edge of Dundee to have a wee go at mountain biking under the tutelage of Paul McFarlane. Now, Paul's recently been appointed a trail therapy mountain bike leader. Never heard of such a thing, for developing mountain biking in Scotland. He's going to be working with folks struggling with mental ill health, and he told Laura all about it while putting her through her paces on the trail.
Okay, so we'll just go on a gentle ride first. Just going to go down through the wood behind you. There's no trails that's going to catch you out here. Okay. Just for us to warm up. You get to the bottom, it's up a farm track all the way to the reservoir. It's slightly uphill, so okay. It should be nice and warm
good.
By the time we get up there.
Excellent. Okay, right. Let's go.
I'm a mountain bike leader, which means I'm qualified under the mountain bike leader scheme to take people out on various graded trails. The trail therapy part of that is me supporting our colleagues in the NHS Green Health Partnership and NHS Lanarkshire to take their clients out and improve their mental health and their mental well-being.
There's loads of wildlife through in these woods, loads of red squirrels around here. You can start looking in the trees, you'll see bat boxes,
oh, yeah.
Bird boxes.
So there was a pilot project done about 3 years ago down in the Borders, primarily around Peebles and the Glentress area. And it was done in partnership with Edinburgh Napier University to understand the benefits of physical activity and being outdoors, but using mountain biking as the medium. And the feedback that they got was absolutely phenomenal, really good, showed really positive benefits to the clients that were undertaking it. The type of therapy it uses, dialectical behavioural therapy. I think most people have heard of cognitive behavioural therapy, which is a talking therapy. The DBT is more involved in doing things. So the doing activity in this case is mountain biking. The first part is being able to focus the mind. So you can imagine going down a mountain bike trail, you go over roots, you go over a bump. That's the challenge that you're going to encounter. So you have to focus the mind in order to go over it. Second part of that is your decision-making skills. How are they challenged? And some people might have a fight or flight response, which is quite normal, especially if you're suffering from anxiety, for example. So this will kind of help you to regulate those decisions. There's the social aspect as well. How are you within a group? And mountain biking is really, really social, really supportive and really encouraging. And finally, the fourth aspect of it is about the emotional regulation. When those emotions kind of get the better of us, keep kind of creeping up, how do we put it in context and make them kind of grounded in reality? And having the clinical staff on hand and having myself on hand as well to maybe break down features that are on the trail, make it seem a little bit less intimidating and giving people the right skills in order to encounter that.
Trail changes ever mm-hmm. so slightly from wider to narrower, but there's no surprises on
okay.
it.
Okay, so what should I mean, I've been kind of enjoying this as a leisurely cycle so far, but if with a mountain bike hat on, what kind of techniques should I be employing at this point?
At this point, you'd be more kind of looking at your range of gears and, okay. and utilising the best gear for going uphill and downhill. Mm-hmm. If you start going downhill here, we might encounter some roots, that type of thing. At which point I would be saying standing up mm-hmm. on your bike using flat pedals, that's pedals level with each other.
Okay.
Finger over each brake, go round nice and smooth, and then pedal out.
Okay, right.
Okay, there's a little drop here.
Oh yeah, oh gosh, hazard. No, that was me not paying attention to the pedal thing. So that's my own fault there.
Got another opportunity oh, yeah. here to
okay.
try it.
Okay.
It's a little bit easier than one you've
yeah.
just done. This is more of a kind of roll in and
right.
roll up.
Okay.
So make sure that you're yep, bent arms,
bent
legs, point your toes upwards.
Right. Okay.
And stay off the brakes. Just be
okay.
confident the bike's gonna roll down and up
and
the other
up.
Side.
Oh god. Yes. Success.
I have to say that the idea of just focusing purely on what's in front of you, I could definitely relate to that. You really are in that kind of moment, aren't you?
Absolutely. And there's a big movement towards mindfulness at the moment. And that's what mindfulness is. If anyone's ever done a mindfulness session or class, it is about being in the moment and really kind of deconstructing everything that's happening right there and then. And that's what we're trying to teach with the trail therapy.
So who's going to be involved? What kind of groups are you going to be taking out?
During this year, the project's running for 1 year. Got a cohort in Dundee, which is run by the Green Health Partnership. And we'll be taking referrals from themselves and getting their clinical leads coming along. And they're the main support for the clients that are coming along. And I'm kind of supporting the clinical lead. Over on the West Coast, we've got NHS Lanarkshire. And again, they've got a different group of clients that they'll be working with. And I have been taking their clinical leads out for the past 2 weeks, working on their skills, working on their abilities. With them having gone through the process, it's easier for them to relate that back to the client. Any challenges that they've encountered, they can say, well, this is how we dealt with it, and this is how I dealt with it. It might work for you. And then obviously I'm on hand as well to provide other areas of support, other avenues that we might need to look at.
And, you know, you mentioned the kind of element of camaraderie and team, because even though, you know, we're obviously both on separate bikes and everything, it doesn't look like you're kind of working together. There's a lot of teamwork about mountain biking.
Yeah, and I suppose that's one of the common misconceptions about mountain biking, that is a solo event. It is in some respects, and that's where the mindfulness really comes into it. But having that support network, people on hand to guide you, support you, and congratulate you when you get past that feature, that's really, really important.
And are the clients that you're going to be working with, I imagine they're people that maybe mountain biking hasn't been something that they've thought was open to them in the past.
We talk about misconceptions, and I suppose a misconception about mountain biking is that you need a full face helmet, lots of body armour, and you'll be throwing yourself down the steepest hill possible. Yes, there is that part to mountain biking, but it's a very small part. The majority of mountain biking is gentle trails that we've been on today, which are accessible to everybody.
There's a bigger route ahead. Pack it with gusto.
Okay.
For me, the more people out on bikes getting healthy, physically, mentally, the better from that. What I want out of this project at the end is to develop ambassadors that will come back and mentor the next lot of participants that are coming through this trail. I can stand here all day and tell you how great bikes are and how great it is to be outdoors, and I'm being absolutely genuine about that. However, the people that have gone through the program and have got the most out of it, they are the voice that we need to tell everybody to get involved.
Paul McFarlane there, trail therapy mountain bike leader for developing mountain biking in Scotland. I mean, talking about hurling yourself down the hill, I can't remember what the record is for the Black Run at Annachmore, but what did you do it in?
Oh, 7 hours.
Having worn out 3 sets of brakes in the process.
Yeah. You know, because I had the Lycra as well. I thought it was I tell you, it's a scary Black Run that I am, and I walk down most of it. But I do have a top tip. If you see a rock in the middle of the path, don't look at it, because you will hit it.
Yeah, it's equivalent to skiing, really, isn't it? You know, I came back from going round one of the low-level mountain biking trails at Annachmore. Not the Black Run, I wasn't that stupid. But, you know, and it was ridiculous. I mean, they'd put all sorts of impediments in the track. They could have easily been cleared. I don't know what they were playing at. But at one stage, the bike kind of stood on its nose, and, you know, and I slid down sideways. And you know the big cog that takes the chain? The chain had come off, but several of the teeth went into the back of my leg.
Ooh.
So I didn't even notice it at the time. You know, I came back, and the guy says, oh, look, you're bleeding and what have you. But because it's got this black graphite grease on the cog, effectively I tattooed my leg. And for all the world, it looked like a shark bite or a bear bite. I used to tell the kids that's what it was.
Well, you still fill it in with Black Biro, don't you?
Yeah, I do. This is where I was swimming off the Great Barrier Reef. Yeah, yeah, but never mind. But wonderful to see that there's something like that, you know, using an outdoor activity, you know, and just joining the dots. Talking about mental health can be extremely difficult. It's something that a lot of folk are not inclined to do, but it is good to talk. Earlier this week, I visited Martin's Monday Club in Oban. Now, the club is named after Martin Cruikshanks, who sadly took his own life just 3 years ago. Lorraine King is the club's service coordinator.
Back in early 2018, there were 5 suicides of young local men in Oban. And Des McMillan, who was a See Me champion at the time, he said, you know, we have to do something about this. We can't have our communities ravaged like this. And it was a similar story just up the road in Fort William that year. So Des set up a walk a mile event, and there was 200 people turned up, and that just showed the demand and the interest and the care really that people had for the people that had sadly felt they had no choice but to end their lives. So Des set up this walk, and then out of that, there was a real demand for a men's mental health group in Oban, which didn't have anything like that, and a peer support group. So it was all about men talking to other men who had experienced the same kind of things, depression, anxiety, low mood. So That started up in July 2018. And the first night they had 30 men turn up from the community, and they were really blown away by how many men actually came along and opened up and spoke about their mental health.
My name is Alan McDougall, and I'm a facilitator for Martin's Monday Club.
And what does a facilitator do?
Takes the group and, you know, starts it off and asks the questions, you know.
What kind of questions do you ask?
We have four basic questions. First of all, to any new person, would you mind introduce yourself and tell us why you're here? Then it goes around. And the second question is, how was your week, Ben? Then we go on to a third question. It's not really a question now, it's just you can say anything you want. Mm-hmm. Anything, you know, except for, well...
When you hit that point to say to folk, you know, sometimes amongst a total group of strangers, you can say anything you want. What kind of things do people say?
To my mind, it's mostly suffering from anxiety and depression, and some may be drink-related or drug abuse-related. It covers quite a spectrum, but I'll say mostly anxiety and depression.
Are there particular circumstances here in Oban that cause particular problems, or does it tend to be endemic across Scotland?
I think it's across Scotland, actually, but obviously being from in this local environment, I mean, it's beautiful, and today it's especially beautiful, but it can be very bleak up here. The winter can be very bleak. The economy's very based on tourism.
You know, so come the winter time, it shuts, basically.
It shuts down, yeah. A lot of people don't have any work in the winter. A lot of people turn to alcohol, drugs. There is a homelessness problem in Oban. It's not massive, but it exists. So people who come to Oban for a holiday think it's this beautiful area with no social problems, and it's the same as anywhere else. It might be smaller in number, but we have the same issues. Yeah.
And why did you get involved in it in the first place?
I've been involved since the first day. Because I back in the late 80s, I attempted to take my own life. And luckily, I didn't succeed. And that was always in the back of my mind. And I never talked about it. I never, you know, talked about it in detail. But since joining Martin's Monday Club, after my second year, I did talk about it. And it's good to talk. That's our motto.
Do you mind me asking why you'd got into that circumstance? Why you'd got into that state?
Back then?
Aye.
Yeah. I'd been separated from my wife, and I just couldn't seem to do anything. I was staying in digs, and I missed my two sons. And then one day I just decided to walk into the water. But luckily I came back out.
Yeah.
And so I can sort of empathise with people that feel that way. And at the same time, you're talking about yourself. And by listening to other people, you're helping them. So the original two-way street. After 3 years, I've learned so much, and I just, you know, just a great club. It's wonderful.
What impact has COVID-19 over the last year and a half had?
Goodness. So we've been running two meetings a week. We run a women's group as well once a week, and still run the men's group. When COVID-19 hit, we straight away went on to Zoom meetings. We ran for 18 weeks on Zoom. It's better than nothing, but it's just not the same.
Yeah.
They wanted to be sitting face to face in a room. You know that that you get when you look somebody in the eye?
Well, you can pick up all sorts of subtleties face to face that you cannot see on a screen.
On Zoom, yeah. The whole group really struggled.
It must have been quite difficult for the helpers not to break the rules and say, oh, sod it, let's just meet down in the front, we'll go for a walk or whatever.
Yeah. We've stuck to the rules all the way. Whenever we were allowed to go for walks, we teamed up in pairs.
But we love to encourage people to come along, and we have a good hardcore, like 16 to 18 membership weekly, and some come and go, but we do have that hardcore. You know, we bonded together over 3 years. We led to friendships and things. But again, I'd just like to stress, it is just peer-to-peer, you know. We want people to think we can solve their problems. We can help, but we can't diagnose. I just think it's a wonderful thing for the town. And you see, they're popping up. There's one in Mull now, there's one in Fort William. You know, men's support groups.
That's a good thing.
It is. I really do think that, yes.
Has Martin's Monday Club actually made a difference? And I ask that, you know, knowing that in science it's really difficult to prove a negative.
Yeah. We reckon, since we started in July 2018, that we have saved 33 lives. That's our reckoning. During lockdown, we had 6 suicide interventions with people who were really, really, you know, on the edge, really. And luckily, we were able to intervene and support them, whether that be through phone calls or meeting up, going for a walk, or getting them along to A&E or their GP. Yeah, so it has made a difference, definitely, yeah.
Lorraine King and Alan McDougall of Martin's Monday Club in Oban, and we're going to be hearing more from members of that group later on in the programme. It's a very simple idea, but it seems to be very effective.
That figure of 33 lives or 33 interventions is scary. Mm-hmm. In a wee place like Oban, and obviously such a need for it throughout the country.
Yeah. But again, I think there is this assumption, and I think I talk about it later, that, you know, because it is, you know, it's a nice area, pretty area, bonny area, and a non-urban area, that, you know, there won't be the same problems. You know, a friend of mine who used to be a senior social worker was at an event in, I think it was Dundee at one stage, and was standing next to another social worker from the east end of Glasgow, and she says, "Oh, where are you from?" She says, "Oh, I work in rural Aberdeenshire." And she says, "Oh, I'd love that." She says, "How do you mean?" She says, "Well, to work in an area with no problems." You know?
Yeah, I remember Gary Ennis did a programme on suicide in Shinty a couple of years back. And, yeah, you're right, a rural idyll is wonderful, but it does bring problems, especially isolation and serious rural poverty. There are many bits that have no internet connection. It's not perfect.
No, by no manner of means. You're listening to Out of Doors on BBC Radio Scotland. I'm Mark Stephen. He's you and Michael Wraith. We've got heaps more coming up, including something I came across by accident quite recently. Magnet fishing. All will be revealed. More coming up from my time in Oban.
Yeah, but first have a wee listen to this mystery bird. I'm guessing it's pretty easy, but have a listen. So if you think you know what that is, I'll give you a clue. It's a female. You can email outofdoors@bbc.co.uk, text 80295, and give Lewis a call on 0808 925 9500.
All across Radio Scotland, this week we've been taking a moment to think about well-being as part of Mental Health Awareness Week. Now, our colleagues at Travelling Folk made a really interesting programme examining the links between music, nature and well-being. And they invited some musicians to share their experiences. Young fiddle player Charlie Gray recorded his thoughts on nature and creativity while paddling up a stream in the Isle of Lismore.
Well, hello. My name is Charlie Gray, and I'm a musician and composer living on the Isle of Lismore in western Scotland. I'm currently walking up this beautiful shallow river up from where I live. We live down on the water, and there's this beautiful little river that comes up to a sort of glen at the back and eventually winds up onto the hillside, and you can get a true sense of the whole island from up there. But I'm out with the wee puppy at the moment, Hector the Border Collie. The river itself is an amazing place. It's a total hive of activity with the birds, and it's really amazing because it doesn't really come up past your feet, so you can sort of wade up in your wellies, and you can probably hear from the recording it trickling past. Nature and natural places have always been very, very important to me. And, you know, they're important to me for several reasons, but, you know, the big one is it's a place of recharge. And it's the place where you come to let all your thoughts just sort of get a bit of breathing space. And I grew up in a lovely place called Fort Augustus, which is in the Great Glen. And I must admit, living here on the island is amazing, but I do miss that closed in the hills feeling and the beautiful trees you get there. So this river walk for me is one of my many happy outdoor spaces that I come to to find inspiration for my creativity. I'm a composer as well as a fiddle player, and I've always found it most easy to write in response to landscape. And I think that's the case for a few reasons, but certainly the big overriding one, which has kind of been in my mind for the past few months, is that when I see an amazing bit of landscape or a beautiful natural scene, it sparks that exact same feeling inside me that I get when I'm playing the fiddle. And I also get that feeling when I see beautiful artwork, or when I watch a great film, or when something really sad happens or something really good happens. You know, it all taps into that quite vulnerable part of ourselves. Yeah, I really strive for that in my music. I think there's, personally, I don't think there's much point in playing music if I don't really reach that point. I think it's one of the many reasons why I love nature and natural places so much, because it kind of forces you into that place, really, of just letting go a little bit. I brought the fiddle with me out on this walk, so I might have a wee tune in response to the bird song today. So I'll finish up from Sunny Lismore here with a bit of improvisation on the hardanger. Here we go.
Musician Charlie Gray there. Lovely. And that was recorded for Travelling Folk, and you can hear all of their programme from earlier this week, looking at how nature inspires musicians, if you head over to BBC Sounds, just search for Travelling Folk. I have to say, one of the things I've been just an avid fan of, huge fan of, is on Twitter, Duncan Chisholm has been playing pieces all around Scotland, and beautiful locations and just beautiful, you know, beautiful musicianship, beautiful pieces of music, you name it. It's been a real gift, I think, to Scotland, that. So well done, Duncan.
There's something about the fiddle playing outside. I don't know if you cast your mind back. We were on Arran, and we went out to the island there where the Buddhist temple is.
Oh, yeah.
And we took a fiddler with him. I've no idea why we did it, but he played on the beach there. And it was just that blend of nature and fiddle music just really, really works.
Yeah, yeah. But do you remember, was it a couple of weeks ago, it was Name the Lamb Spot?
Yes.
Joan and Lewis from Rothie Norman. So you may remember 2 weeks ago, we asked your erudite audience for suggestions for help naming a new wee black lamb just born on May Day morning. Thanks for the suggestions. We went for Doola Doo, and she's doing away well in spite of the slow grass. The grass is hellish slow this year. Keep wearing the simmets. Yes, we will, John and Lewis, absolutely. And thank you for another brilliant programme. It is just ridiculously cold for this time in May. And Colin Abercrombie has been in touch to say we had a fantastic kayak trip yesterday out from North Berwick around the Bass Rock. Sea conditions were perfect, and the sight, sound and smell of the gannets was as wonderful as ever. Truly a natural wonder.
Ed, thankfully, some people getting this wrong. I was a bit worried it was going to be too easy, but Jill and Monifi thought it was a buzzard. No. Frieda and Falkirk thought it was a lapwing. And Alistair MacDonald Glasgow thought it was a lapwing as well. Well, it's not.
No. And Gary and Mal Nuts Sunny Leith says the cats have been spooked and hid under the table after the mystery bird call. Now I know that bird song. Is it a peacock? No, it's not. It's a good guess, though, actually. And yeah. Ian and Claire says, we think the mystery bird is a buzzard. Love listening to you from North Northumberland. Keep up the good work. Coming up, Ewan tells us how wildlife can lift your spirits. And we also meet a group who are rather wonderfully finding friendship along with a heap of scrap metal.
Yeah, it's a thing I didn't even know existed, but stay with us. And the mystery bird, ever popular. I think it's really easy, but it's up to you. What do you think this is? If you don't get that. Anyway, out of doors at bbc.co.uk. 80295 on the text, and Lewis and Finlay are taking your calls. 0808592950.
I was down in Edinburgh a couple of weeks ago, in Leith, and I went out for my lunch and I was wandering about and I saw a guy just beside the sort of basin in Leith. And he was throwing this bit of string in with a lump of something at the far end, and you know, being naturally curious, I went across and said, what are you doing? He says, magnet fishing. What? It's becoming increasingly popular. The catch, obviously, is not fish, but anything metal that a strong magnet on a line can pick up, which has been submerged in rivers or canals or whatever it is. Scrap metal, that sort of thing. Robbie Armstrong headed out with members of the Glasgow Magnet Fishing Group, and I think it's wonderful that such a thing exists. But apparently for some of the group, the mental health benefits far outweigh anything else in the activity.
Yeah. Let's see if it's a rider. Whee! There you go.
So in the magnet fishing parlance, a rider's one you just pull straight out the water and then you go for it.
It's a magnet fishing law. If you get a scooter, you've got to see if it's a rider or not. So, it's an unwritten law, but it's our law. As you can see, it's a comradeship. I see half of these people as my family now. It's like, before magnet fishing 2 years ago, I didn't know half of these people and see now. I'd honestly couldn't see myself living without them, because they're like family. And then next week, we're all going on a big camping trip, and it's like the whole crew is going away, because we've been locked up for 5 months. We've not been out, no had any fun, so we're all going to go camping, have a good swaggy and have a good time.
It's like a big mental health benefit you've talked about previously. Yeah. What is it that helps you so much about it?
Well, see, the mental health aspect of it, Robbie, is majorly helped my mental health, because, see, before this, if I'm being honest, a lot of my friends were in the house and they were all just drinking and doing stuff that they shouldn't have been doing, and I just wanted away from it. And I kind of, this might sound sad to say, but I kind of didn't have any friends before this, because I distanced myself from them, because I didn't like the way their lives were going. Now I've got this big group of friends, I've got my own business, I mean, my mental health is tenfold changed. I wake up in the morning with a smile on my face and feel like I've got a reason to live now, and it's all through flinging a magnet in the water, which is unbelievable, you know what I mean?
If you told yourself that 2.5 years ago, that would bring you so much joy, I bet you would have laughed.
Aye, well, I would have, and I feel like I've kind of found my forte. I do my live videos, and I've got a lot of people that I don't know, I can't go anywhere in Glasgow without somebody shouting to me, doing your granny's bit, they all recognise me, because of my daft live videos. I'm a public character, I maybe swear a wee bit and things like that, but I'm an East End boy, you know, but it's, I don't know, I feel like I've kind of found my niche, a reason to be, if that makes sense, whereas before I felt like I was just existence. And it's like every night I'll get 10, 20 people messaging me, and see, before magnet fishing I never had any of that, and a lot of our members are struggling with mental health and were suicidal and had no confidence. And then they've got to sign them off, and then they either take them, repair them, jet wash them, clean them, keep them for scrap. But listen, the biggest majority of them are all, but like I say, them, I think a good jet wash and things like that, they'll be alright, you know what I mean?
Some of them are cleaning the ones I've seen in Lidl.
The trolley crew 112.
What's your name?
My name's Joy.
And how long have you been magnet fishing?
The first lockdown, just near the end of it, I started. Just tried it once here, actually. And that was it. But because of lockdown, I've not been out because I'm and I suffer from severe anxiety and depression. So I find it hard going out. Sorry. I get panic attacks when I'm with people.
Take a minute, sorry, yeah.
But because I know the group, we're all like a big family and I don't panic so much with them. But it's done wonders for me because otherwise I would just be in the house, sit in my corner crying because that's what I do. But yeah, I love it. It's so therapeutic. And getting my friends into it as well makes it so much better.
That's great. So is it just being out with people who sort of support you and having something to do? What is it? Can you put your finger on it?
Well, this is, to me, cleaning up the environment and making it better for the fish. And one thing, we used to have great fishing in Scotland and all the canals and stuff, and it's not like that now. Because all these shopping trolleys and bikes and scooters and things that people say it's the kids, it's not just the kids, it's the teenagers, the adults, young adults do it, even drunken adults do it. Can't put it on the kids, they can't. But I've got grandkids and I want them to have a place that's... the environment's going to pot as it is, you know, so if I can do that one wee thing to help, then I'm game. But no, it's... this, to me, is living.
What have you got, Sam?
Right.
You can do BMX, mate. New set of tyres.
When was the last time you were out, Claire?
We came out last week, which was good because I know a lot of people have been struggling with their mental health during lockdown, so it's been good to get the opportunity to see other people and get out for some fresh air and just get away from the four walls. I'm fortunate that I'm a support worker, so I still get to interact with people, but for a lot of people that's members of the group, that's the only opportunity they're getting to socialise and kind of get out as well, which has been great, which has been really, really good. It does feel like I'm a family here as well, which is really nice. Everybody's so nice and friendly.
Have you been on it yet? I was born in Gaffamlock 38 years up there, but I'm now staying in Toll Cross, so I moved out of the Gaffamlock. I just wanted to change my life. I felt I was stuck in a circle and it was too easy, and it was just a lot around about me, a lot of drug abuse and things like that. It's the same in Toll Cross, but I don't know anybody, so I kind of keep myself to myself now. My mind's better, I'm out working and I'm just a happier guy. I've changed my life, you know what I mean?
And would you have been able to do that without magnet fishing?
No, I wouldn't have been. I'm not saying that I wouldn't have sorted my life out, because I think it took me a long time to grow up. I think some guys take a lot of time to mature, and I was young and dumb and dead immature when I was younger. And I'm 40 in June, Robbie, and I finally grew up, and I've got a son now, so I've got a reason to grow up and live for. So I just wanted a lifestyle change, and I've done it, and it's the best thing I've done.
Mark McGeehan, Joy Miller and Claire Slater from the Glasgow Magnet Fishing Group speaking to Robbie Armstrong there.
Fantastic. I never even knew such a thing existed. And yeah, I mean, I could see you doing that.
Actually, I was thinking, what you should get a big magnet and a length of line and just work your way around Josephine, your boat. Because I bet you've dropped heaps of stuff over the side.
I do that regularly. I have a big magnet, and especially spanners. But the problem with stainless steel, obviously, isn't magnetic. So I have done it in the past with a big lump of grease on the magnet.
Oh, right, okay.
And you stab it onto the stainless steel nut or whatever, and you can pull it in that way.
Apparently,
you
know, grease is the word.
Yes. Yeah, I've got this envision of you actually doing the moves there.
No, don't. Just don't do it. Well, interestingly, the guy I met in Leith, I said, you know, what are you actually, you know, fishing for? And he says, oh, just junk. Basically, he says, and money. I thought, is money magnetic? I didn't think it was.
Well, it doesn't stick to me very often.
No, it certainly doesn't stick to me either. Anyway.
I thought, I'm pretty sure it's not magnetic, but I'm going to have to go and try it now.
Yeah, I know. Couple of comments here. Sorry. I'm sitting next to the fire.
Are you telling yourself jokes again?
No, I've got just to explain. I'm sitting next to the fire. Fiona, our producer, brought out a piece of paper, right? And there's enough breeze to blow it away, so I've got it on the ground, held between two pieces of firewood, right? While I've been speaking to you, a couple of sparks have come out and burnt a big hole in the middle of the paper.
People
so I'm just going to have to read round it.
People do not understand the pressures that we have to work
on. No, they don't. They don't. They absolutely don't.
And they don't teach you how to put out a fire from a script in journalism.
No, exactly. And I don't know why. Vary and Kyle in Oxford says, lucky guess a few weeks ago, we're absolutely certain that the mystery bird this week is a heron. And it takes us back to holidays in Ireland. Well, you be absolutely certain, but you're absolutely wrong, I'm afraid. It's close, though. And David Sedgwick in Fort William says, thanks again for the programme. The bird call sounds like that is so close, David, I'm not actually going to read it out. Thanks for the mental health support groups in the West Highlands. It's great to hear the importance of the walking group. The programme by Gary Innes highlighting suicide amongst young shinty players was so moving. We've checked that out. It was called Six Men, still available on BBC Sound. Six Men by Gary Innes. And then he goes on to say, wait for this, the fastest riders on the Mountain Bike World Cup at Annaghmore descend in about 4 minutes and 30 seconds. No. 4 minutes and 30 seconds.
My record is shattered.
Yeah, they've just pipped you at the post, I suspect. Right, let's go back to Oban. Because earlier we heard about Martin's Monday Club and the work it's doing in the area to help folk with mental health issues. The Happy Wee Health Club is also based in the town, and for Mental Health Awareness Week, they've been working in tandem with the Monday Club.
Shall we walk?
Shall we go for a walk? My name's Katie, and I'm half of the Happy Wee Health Club. The other half is Karen. Mm-hmm. So we basically started our wee business at the start of the year, 2021, mm-hmm. because we'd gone into another lockdown, and we thought we kind of need to put together something that's positive, that brings our community of Oban together. And we started an online club. It was supposed to be a 2-week free club to start with, and then everybody just kept asking us to keep going. Mm-hmm. And we start every day with a miracle morning at 6 o'clock.
You'll need to explain that. What's a miracle morning?
Oh, well, Karen's actually the best person to explain the miracle morning.
Okay, Karen, tell me what a miracle morning is. What's a miracle morning?
Miracle morning is a half hour, well, it doesn't need to be half an hour, it's just what we do it for, and it just focuses on your mindset for setting yourself up for the day. We do some meditation, we do some visualization of what our goal looks like and the different steps that we take towards that. Everybody sets their own goals at the beginning of the month, and we just work towards them through the month. And then we finish off with just that feeling of gratitude, so just thinking about what it is that we're feeling grateful for that day. And you can start off with something really small and sort of build on that, but it's just about starting off your day feeling calm, feeling focused and feeling grateful.
See, what I notice here, Katie, is we've come away from quite a busy roundabout, more or less in the centre of Oban, and there's a long crocodile of people in front of us and a long crocodile of people behind. Everybody is yapping to one another. It's great.
Yeah, it's
they just start
fabulous,
talking straight away.
It's incredible. Great. I think over this last few months, we have been so shocked at how people have come together online, yes, but we're so excited to get back out and actually meet each other, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's been great.
And this, like, different groups of people here have actually never met each other before. Mm-hmm. Like, and they just sort of gathered together.
But they've all got, a lot of them have got conversational passports cunningly disguised as dogs.
As dogs. Yes. yeah, there is that
as
well.
There was a lot of puppies over lockdown, wasn't there? Lockdown puppies.
Yeah.
I got one myself.
It's taken us an awful long time to come to the conclusion that physical health and mental health are basically completely intertwined.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, and that's really why Martin's Monday Club got in touch with us last week, is because they've seen all of our, we're quite high on our social media, aren't we, Karen? We're very positive on our social media, and they got in touch with us to say, look, next week's Mental Health Awareness Week, we want to do something, we don't know what, and we kind of think that you girls are the ones to get involved with us. So we decided to do a wee walk every day, because we're allowed, that's the kit, you know, we've got to work within restrictions, we can be outdoors, and it's good to just talk to people.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I just love this. And it's something that we'll definitely plan to carry on into the future as well. It's not just like a 1 week thing. We'll just do this maybe once a week.
Just, obviously nobody had any control as to when lockdown was going to be lifted. It wasn't time to coincide with Mental Health Awareness Week. But you couldn't get any better at the moment. You know, the bluebells are out underneath the trees. Everything is so green at the moment. That is healing in and of itself.
And the birds are so loud just now, which is just lovely, isn't it? We were talking about this the other day as well, about people that have got like cattle around about their house as well, and just hearing that first thing in the morning and just hearing all these noises and being more aware of them. I think because it's been so quiet over this last year, because you're out walking either by yourself or with a smaller sort of group of people, you become more aware of these noises, don't you?
I'm Nikki, and I've been friends with Karen for longer than I'd like to mention, because that would give away how old we are. And
trust me, it's nothing in comparison to the person holding the microphone. Carry on.
So Karen is like a force of positivity, and she spent the last 10 years of our friendship encouraging me to go to join a gym, go to fitness classes, all the sorts of stuff. So then this year, when she started the Happy Bee Health Club with Katie, it kind of was the right time for a lot of people, because January is a bit rubbish and mood was a bit low, and it was a good opportunity to have a community on Facebook and have that kind of positivity, but also just like-minded people, and this being able to go out, meet new people. And
what do you get out of coming on a walk like this though?
It's just nice, you know, there's people that I know that I've caught up with that I would never get a chance to speak to normally, or you say hi to in the street in passing. It's nice being in a group of people again after spending the best part of 12 months with only your family and or any bubble that you've been in. And when you've made a commitment to go for a walk in something like this, then it forces you to actually go, I do need to go for that walk. I can't just put it off. I'm not just going to, you know, sit in the house, or I'm not just going to, you know, go into myself. I'm going to make the effort to go and meet these people and go for the walk and commit to it. So it's good. Accountability as well.
Nikki, along with Karen McDonald and Katie Galbraith of the Happy Wee Health Club in Oban. And it is an old idea that's found its way again. You know, the couple of Latin phrases, mens sana in corpore sano, you know, healthy mind, healthy body. And, you know, in solvitur ambulando, the walking will solve it. You know, it's just, what goes around comes around.
Yeah, I remember doing a programme years ago about health by natural causes. And one of the cures for depression was walk up that mountain.
Yeah,
you know, it's the same thing, but you just get a real sense of release with the folk in these various clubs of actually the pressure cooker being lifted.
Yes, quite. Yeah, and I remember being asked once by was the then health secretary in the Scottish government, you know, what one thing would you do to increase the health of the Scottish people? I said, give everybody a dog. And she laughed and says, no, seriously. Yeah. I said, no, seriously. Yeah. It's because you have to take, hail, rain or shine, you have to take the dog out. It says, people talk to one another when they've got dogs. It says, I don't understand why it works, but it does.
Well, maybe they should be tax deductible.
Then they get much more popular. We've been talking about this morning, the theme of this year's Mental Health Awareness Week is nature and how spending time outdoors can be good for your well-being and mental health. Joining us now to talk about that and the effect of green stuff in particular is Simon Milne, MBE, Regis Keeper at the Royal Botanic Garden in Edinburgh. Good morning, Simon. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning, Mark. Morning, Ewan.
Good morning.
I'm better, having just had a walk around my garden, actually.
Excellent.
Preparing myself for your interrogation.
Better and better. All right, well, it's going to be a very gentle interrogation, so I wouldn't worry about it. How do you think being around green things helps?
Well, hugely, and I think the history's shown that. There's been long awareness of the link between the green stuff, plants and gardens, with mental and physical well-being. We started as a physic garden 351 years ago, so we've been in the health business for a long time. But as we've been hearing, you know, the pandemic has accentuated the realization of the importance of nature.
One thing, we're having a production meeting and people started talking about fractals. What is a fractal and what's the benefit of it?
Yeah, there's been a lot of study into this, actually. It's fascinating. It's essentially, you boil down to shapes which are repeated at different scales. So, for example, out in the countryside, you'd have the trees, and then you'd have individual trees, and then you'd have the branches and the differing sizes and scales, and that stimulates the brain to produce alpha brain waves, which is a good thing. That makes you relaxed. It reduces stress. And the same thing is sort of reflected in the art and architecture as well. So, there's a lot of study going into this. And I think it's all about standing there or even sitting there and observing. So when we're out in nature or in a beautiful garden, don't just walk past things. Take it in, observe it.
Yeah. You've got examples. You know, because people were talking about ferns.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you go to the fernery at Ben Moore, one of our gardens over in Argyll, you would see that. You can observe the ferns, the big ferns, and then the repetition in the fronds and the different scales. And it's worth just sitting there and just observing, and it sinks in. And you don't know it's happening, but your brain's producing all these alpha brain waves, and it's having a reaction on your brain subliminally.
It's a fascinating thing. I remember watching a program, it must have been knocking on 30, 40 years ago, about fractals. And, you know, very, very primitive computer generation. You know, they were basically saying, if you're trying to create an image of a particular tree, then you have to use, you know, the branches have to split off from one another at 17 degrees. Now, you're not walking about the countryside. You know, if you do that, you end up with an elm, say, for an example. You're not walking about the countryside thinking, oh, that's 17 degrees and that's 17 degrees and that's 17 degrees. But it's a bit like in architecture where you've got the golden mean. At some level, your brain is aware of this. It just works for us and it helps. It, you know, it's got a calming, soothing fitness, I suppose.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's why I think it's very important to have quality green spaces. So not just lollipop trees and shorn grass and dogs calling cards. I think in urban areas, we've really got to work harder to produce even better green spaces, and that may involve, you know, the effect of fractals, etc. But it's all about that quality, and that's, we've had the most amazing feedback from visitors when we reopened the gardens back in July. People who've never been to Botanic Gardens before saying thank you, this is the most wonderful experience. It's done my mental health so much good.
You must get kind of sensory overload, Simon, when you're walking around the garden. Because, I mean, I get it. When I've gone through the doors and you get out into the Botanic Gardens and you actually do feel yourself going, wow, just relaxing a bit and drinking it in, because it's such a contrast from the street. It's just a great place. I mean, do you see people getting that benefit of being around the plants?
Yeah, you do. You see it the whole time. And people don't realise it, which is absolutely fine. I think it goes back to that quality thing again. But, you know, you see doctors now giving out green prescriptions. I was speaking to a medical colleague the other day about this. And fascinating area. But the trouble is we have to overcome the perceptions and the attitudes that people go to the doctor and expect to get drugs. But actually, you know, a walk in a good garden in the countryside can actually obviate the need for drugs, but we need a change in attitude sometimes.
Yeah, that we have to remember that we're actually capable of producing, sometimes, in some cases, capable of producing our own medicines internally, which will help us. Can I stand the question on its head to a certain extent? Because, you know, the staff working within the Botanic Gardens, some of them would have been working from home, some of them would have been furloughed originally, you know, but even when they're in the garden, they haven't had the public. They haven't been able to show off or how wonderful the place is. The fact that it is now open to the public, does that help them?
Yes, it has. I mean, they hugely welcomed the public back in again. Not necessarily the children running across the beds, but people coming in and enjoying it, particularly in, you know, this emergency that we're in at the moment. Because we are essentially, as you know, a science-based organisation, but we get over a million, or around about a million visits a year in a normal year, and people love it, and the staff love it as well. And the interaction between the staff and the public is great to watch. It's part of the experience. Can I just go back to about observing nature, just thinking through what you were saying? And I heard on the earlier piece about people yakking away in the countryside, but I would encourage people to stop yakking for a bit, take out the earbuds, and just be mindful of where you are and the noises and the senses and the smells and the colours. I think that's important as well. Too much yakking is not good. I go out with my neighbour sometimes for a walk during lockdown, and she doesn't yak too much, and that's fantastic.
As Regis keeper, you know, you're the boss man. So, you know, if you move about, your staff are going to be watching you move about. Do you ever just find a quiet spot in the garden and just sit yourself?
That's a very good question. I do. I've got two quiet spots.
Don't share them.
Well, actually, they're about to be redeveloped. So, Will, there's a wonderful spot behind our front range glasshouse in the Chilean garden. And there's a little seat tucked away, and I sit there, and a robin come and perches next to me and eats the crumbs, and he leave and perch on my hand. And that's where I escape from the hustle and bustle of running this amazing organisation.
Yeah. It is an amazing resource, and wonderful that it exists and that it's publicly accessible. Simon, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Great to speak to you.
And you. Simon Milner, MBE, Regis Keeper at the Royal Botanic Garden, Edinburgh. You're listening to Out of Doors here on BBC Radio Scotland. I'm Mark Stephen. He's Ewan McElraith. If you miss any of this, we can come and find you.
Yeah, we will come and find you. Or we can take you to BBC Sounds and just look us up.
Or download the Free Scotland Outdoors podcast, which is available from BBC Sounds. Tell us where you listen to the podcast. Email us your stories, which is what Nick Singh in South Australia did. He said, "My name is Nick, I'm 34 years old, and I live in Adelaide, South Australia. I have a massive obsession with Scotland." Well, that makes three of us. "And it's my dream to make it there one day when I can afford it, whether it's a holiday or to move my family there."
I just want to say thanks for your podcasts. I own a mowing franchise, so I've got my earphones on all day, and I listen to your podcast. Makes my day cruise along nicely. It doesn't matter how hard I'm working or what the weather's doing. I'm just happy listening to you on your journeys and describing how beautiful Scotland is.
"It's frustrating," he says, "because I know I can't get there anytime soon, but the way all of you talk and explain things, it really makes me feel like I'm there. Thank you again, and take it easy from Australia."
Join Kim McAllister and me, Eileen Adamson, for Clever About Cash.
If a business owner succeeds, a community succeeds.
We've got everyone from the superstars who've started their own business and are creating employment and opportunities for people, right through to people who've pulled themselves up by the bootstraps.
I couldn't control what happened, but I could control how I react to it in the breaking up.
It doesn't matter what situation you're in, we've got advice that can help you to manage your money better and make more of your money.
Check your direct debits.
Seek that free help today.
Listen for practical advice that'll make a difference to your pocket. Subscribe to the Clever About Cash podcast on BBC Sounds.
Yeah, Ewan and I are considering another programme, which we're going to call Not Terribly Clever About Cash. We think we're ideally suited to present that.
Yeah, we could present that. But go back to what Simon was saying, you know, that special spot. And I think Gregory's Girl, the film, should be prescribed to people. That bit with Claire Grogan lying on her back, looking up at the trees, and just relaxing. I mean, I do it all the time. It's just a great thing.
Yeah.
Just staring up at trees.
Yeah. How often have your neighbours gone past and thought, "Is he still breathing?"
Well, you know, it's strange you say that. I was looking at newts last summer. Remember the days when we had warm days? Well, I was looking at them for ages, you know, at least an hour. My neighbour said he was on the point of coming over because he thought I'd passed out beside the pond.
Coming up later today, Gary Innes returns with the very best in traditional music and song and Take the Floor. We've got music from Bobby Brown and the Scottish Accent Band, and Gary's guest is musician, broadcaster and a tremendous friend of this programme, the one and only Jimmy McGregor. Excellent. Now, being outdoors is doing something you enjoy. It can be great for you both physically and mentally, but sometimes a situation can just go a wee bit squint, and sometimes that happens quite quickly. And at times like that, just every so often, Mother Nature has got a really nice way of helping you out.
"3 o'clock in the afternoon. A snap decision as we rounded the northern tip of Skye. South to the safety of the Kyle of Lochalsh, or north, the unknown. Cape Wrath, the dreaded Pentland Firth, the wild Atlantic, adventure, excitement, achievement. With some trepidation, I pushed the tiller to starboard and followed the compass as it edged to 360, into the unknown. Tarka is a wooden folk boat, 25 feet of mahogany and sheer designer beauty. Its origins in a competition in the Scandinavia of 1940 to create a boat for the people, the folk, the Volk. It sails like a dream, but 25 feet in the face of the massive power of the Atlantic is a big ask. The weather forecast was fair. It always is, just before you make a big mistake. Gentle-ish winds from the northwest should have sounded the alarm bells, but the sun was up and what could possibly go wrong? The plan was to head past Gairloch, Pooyew, and make for Kinloch Bervie, the port created in the heady days of the Highlands and Islands Development Board for a fishing industry that never really took off. A big safe haven, a tricky entrance to spot, but the sun was out and the wind was kind. As the day wore on, life was great. I'd saved all my life for a yacht. I'd served as a junior officer in Royal Navy patrol boats, minesweepers, frigates and guided missile destroyers, even a terrifying trip in a nuclear submarine. Yet here on the west coast of Scotland, I was in command, a master and commander at last. As we edged northwards, I was aware of a shift in the breeze. The wind was changing and getting stronger. I looked behind me and didn't like what I saw. The waves were becoming rollers, still benign in the sunshine, but with white at the tops. The breeze was growing, and exposed on the northwest tip of Scotland in a freshening wind is no place to be in a 25-foot boat. Apprehension slowly turned to worry. Time to reduce sail. Not so easy as the waves were now dwarfing the boat. Engine on and heading directly into the waves. As Tarka leapt and crashed into the massive rollers, my heart was in my mouth. One hand holding onto the rail as the sea threw her like a toy in the churning sea. Finally the reef was in. Sail shortened. Hard over to port and onwards to Kinloch Bervie. Some 3 hours of sailing yet. As she settled onto her course, I was scared. It's one of the most unpleasant courses in a yacht. The wind and sea from behind, the yawning, meandering course, so difficult to hold. Surfing down one wave and twisting into the wind for the next. For those prone to seasickness, this is the worst. Each blast of the wind desperately trying to turn the boat side on to the gale, which would mean capsize, or worse, as one seafarer put it, being chased by haystacks. I was low, very low, scared, questioning my decisions, my ability, my sanity. I didn't have to be here. A stupid decision, a failure. The depressive thoughts fed on each other, gathered momentum in a space where clarity and judgment were essential. Then, as it couldn't, hopefully, get any worse, an amazing thing. As Tarka rolled with the blows, a dolphin appeared on the starboard side. A common dolphin, that distinctive white belly and knowing eye. Then another, and then six dolphins, weaving and ducking under the bow, leaping into the air, frolicking in the gale. Dolphins, at the best of times, are uplifting. But on that stormy day in July, they saved my sanity. For 2 hours, that small pod played with my boat, and then played with my mind, brought joy out of despair. Why they appeared, I'll never know. What the reason for spending 2 hours with a desperate boat is a thing I'll never understand. But what I do know is they dragged me from a very dark place. Those dolphins stayed with me till a mile from the harbour. Then, as mysteriously as they had come, they left. Now, I'm reluctant to attribute motive to a wild animal. But I was low, very low, and they came and they stayed with me till their need was no more. And for that, I'll be eternally grateful.
I'm going to take that story at face value, you know, because I think it did help you. Whatever their motivation was, it didn't really matter. It helped you. It was a good thing to happen at a bad time.
Well, I think they were just playing, but it was the fact they appeared at a really bad time and stayed with me, you know, for all the way up to the harbour. It was just uncanny, but You know, dolphins playing with your boat is a good thing to watch. It just lightens the whole mood. But
no, it is strange.
Yeah, strange one. Anyway, that's why I've got a bigger boat.
One of the reasons. One of the reasons. Right, yeah. Could we have another blast of the mystery bird, this week's mystery bird? We've got all sorts of wrong answers for this, which really surprises me. I must confess, I didn't expect there to be wrong answers. Lynn D'Agostino in Sunny Sky says, is there a mystery bird, a bittern, just about to head up a mountain? I think it's Lynn who's heading up the mountain, not the bittern. Bittern's boom, Lynn, I think. Mary Frame in Gifford says, not great weather here in East Lothian either, I'm so chuffed. I've been trying for a long time to attract goldfinches to my garden, and at long last I have a pair coming three or four times a day to the Niger Seed Feeder. Is the mystery bird a golden plover? It's not, but the Niger Seed Feeder is the only supposing you've never seen a goldfinch in your life, stick out some Niger Seed, and more or less guaranteed within 20, 30 minutes, I don't know what attracts them, but they're mad for the stuff. Absolutely mad for the stuff.
I still think of them as Nigella seeds.
Yeah, but we're not going to talk about that. George R. Robertson Tane says, I think the mystery bird may be a whimbrel. Again, not. Donald and Ella Lewis thought it was a lapwing distress call, and Bill in Glasgow thought it was an oyster catcher.
All wrong, satisfyingly.
Satisfyingly wrong.
This really surprises me, and I'm going to have to go and try it. Lil Kenyon in Forest says, good morning, boys.
Boys.
Bless. Some money is magnetic. My son Fergus goes magnet fishing in Forest and often comes back with coppers along with other unidentifiable junk.
I remember reading somewhere that they changed the pound coin because so many of them were being faked. You know, there's such cheap fakes and the thing. So maybe it's the fakes they're picking up. I don't know.
No prizes for guessing what we're going to be doing after this programme finishes.
No. And probably more constructive and productive than we'd normally spend a Saturday morning. Let's go back to Oban. My walk there, I met a lady called Emma Grant. For Emma, she finds the environment really important when it comes to sort of bringing balance to our lives.
I run a business called Heartfelt Change, and I work with people who struggle with anxiety, feelings of being overwhelmed, frustrated, any kind of stresses, the normal stresses of every day. And I inspire people to walk a calmer path. It could be an outdoor path, could be an indoor path. So to walk a calmer path and I inspire people to find more joy in their lives. And I do that using a mixture of meditation techniques and focused relaxations, various exercises, breathing exercises.
When you have a group like this, what role do the surroundings play? Because we're walking through mature trees, you can see through the trees down onto the road there and into the bay, and it's a calm day, and you know, I just love this kind of environment.
Yeah. I think for me, this environment gives a steadiness to life. It gives a sense of permanence. So while we may be having an up and down day or an up and down week, there's a sense of permanence and steadiness that you can just draw from nature. You know, you see little seedlings being planted and coming up, you see the trees. It's like, you know, if you look at the trees here, so, you know, they all look really healthy. They're actually all facing out that way. The wind's battered them on this side, but they're still standing strong. There's no branches on this side.
No.
They're all heading out to the sea and the daylight.
And the light. Yeah.
But they're still strong, and they've adapted to their surroundings, and they're still strong and beautiful. And, you know, that's us in our lives if we're healthy, isn't it? We're adapting to what's going on, particularly in the last year, but we're standing strong and beautiful.
That's something I was very conscious of across the last year, particularly the first two lockdowns. However restrictive it was and however difficult it was for some people, as it undoubtedly was, and I'm not really including myself in that, I think I was quite lucky because of where I stay. But you always knew that the leaves would come back in the trees.
Yeah.
The geese would leave eventually, the swallows would come back. You know, there is a continuity over and above us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I think I was referring to when I'm talking about this, the permanence of nature. And for me as well, because I love gardening, there's no better sense of hope for the future when you take a walk and see the new leaves coming up you see the buds coming up on the trees, and it is, it's just that sense of there is a future, things will carry on, and we as humans in amongst it all may feel like we've been in a real maelstrom for the last year, but life goes on, you know, life goes on, and we're so lucky to be in these surroundings. I love it, absolutely love it. And the, you know, you can look at things close up and see all the buds and the new things starting, or you can take a view out to the sea and look at the distance and get a sense of the hugeness of things as well. It's just, we're so lucky to be here. It's beautiful.
A friend of mine quite recently put me down rather beautifully. He says, you know, occasionally you say things that sound like a fridge magnet. He says, that doesn't mean they're wrong, it just says.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I can sort of rant about, like, you know, the fridge magnet sayings. I think they can be, they can actually sometimes end up leaving you feel a little bit like you should be able to just find calm, you should be able to,
and carry on,
and carry on, absolutely, and whatever, and carry on. And I think for many people, having the support of charities like the local charity, like the Martins Monday Club, to support them in that journey to be able to enjoy it and carry on, mm-hmm. is vital. Or the Happy We Health Club, or the services I provide, whatever it is, it's like sometimes I feel like we're alone on this journey, and that we should be able to do things. We can read a self-help book and we should just be able to do all these things. And I think we really need to ask for support sometimes. But yeah, so fridge magnets plus support.
Real life experience.
That's your,
Emma Grant there of Heartfelt Change. And actually, many thanks to everyone I met in Oban. It was just great to be with so many folk who just really appreciate the benefits of being outdoors and what that can mean to your mental health. It was great.
And, you know, it's such a positive thing that people are prepared to facilitate it. You know, obviously there's a need for it, but getting somebody can actually make it happen is such a great thing. You know, volunteers throughout the country.
Time now to reveal this week's mystery bird. But first, I'm just going to give some name checks for folk that have got the right answer. This is anonymous. It says, I guess Tawny Owl. Your programme just makes my Saturday mornings and reminds me of that lovely feeling. Flask, peace, boots and map, and go. Roll on next time. Lil Kenyon and Forrest says, good morning, boys. Yes, someone is magnetic. Blah, blah, blah. That's what... Well, you've read that out already.
Yeah,
Miguel,
yes, exactly. You just read anything it's put in front of you.
Seriously, put a laundry list in front of me. I don't care. Miguel says, my guess is the Tawny Owl. Not long after moving here from New Mexico, was living in a farmhouse at the hill of Rothy Mays. One night, while out absorbing the serene beauty of a star-studded dark sky, there came a full-blown screech of a tawny owl. First time I heard this, nearly jumped out of my skin. Since then, I've nothing but admiration for these beautiful night birds. Hasta luego. Catherine Jarvis from Stourport in Worcestershire got it right. Isabel Madden, John and Lewis Rothy, Norman Stewart, Naismith from Inch, Ian MacDonald back in Meath in Ireland, saying, top of the morning, gents. And says, and thanks for Charlie Gray's fiddle piece, a wonderful improvisation, an uplifting tonic. Great show as ever. The correct answer, obviously, was Tawny Owl. And here's Ewan to give you a wee bit more about it.
As night fell, an owl called in the darkness. Quick, the female. And then the male answers, woo, woo. And those round the fire fell silent, for this was a dangerous call. A call from a spirit that could speak to those long gone. The night continued in hushed tones, as the tawny or brown owl has one talon in this life and the other in the spirit world. In Scotland, a call of lost souls, a harbinger of doom. Sir Walter Scott wrote in The Legend of Montrose, birds of omen, dark and foul, night crow, raven, bat and owl, leave the sick man to his dream. All night long he heard your scream. And the brown owl is big in fiction. That call has inspired the soundtrack of films and television, from Midsummer Murders to Harry Potter. But that classic, to wit, to woo, is in itself a bit of a myth, being an amalgam of kawick, as I've said, made by the female, and the male answering, woo-hoo.
And the jump from that to twit to woo is a bit of a leap. In fact, it was Shakespeare shoehorning the overlapping calls to fit into a verse in Love's Labour's Lost. The nightly sings the staring owl, to wit, to woo, a merry note, while greasy Joan doth keel the pot. Quick, woo-hoo-hoo, just doesn't scan, so he changed it, and that to wit, to woo survives 500 years on. It's also got its place in the Girl Guide Hall of Fame as Brown Owl. When Baden-Powell formed the Girl Guides in 1910, there was a demand from younger girls to become involved as well. So he set up the Rosebuds in 1914, which evolved into the Brownies, with Brown Owl the adult leader in charge. Now, the owl got involved in the Brownie story when two children visit the Brown Owl in the woods to find out how, no sexual stereotyping here, they can help with the housework. Not quite so benevolent is the appearance in Beatrix Potter's Squirrel Nutkin, when a group of brave squirrels travel to Owl Island and have to offer the brown owl a gift to gain permission to gather nuts. Squirrel Nutkin taunts the owl with riddles, and eventually old brown owl snaps and gives him a serious thrashing. Now, owls are generally seen as bad luck. Many doors in country areas, even up to the 1950s, would see an owl nailed to the woodwork of a barn door for protection from evil spirits, fire, lightning and disease. And the Tory owl's got a pretty laid-back approach to hunting. A barn owl, or a little owl, flies silently through the landscape, looking for prey. The Tory just hangs out on a branch, waiting for something to pass underneath, and then just drops on it. Apart from those adapted to urban life, where goldfish are a favourite. They're also aggressive. They will fly at a swallow or a martin's nest, throwing themselves backwards at the last moment and locking talons into the mud structure, ripping it from its foundations to get at the chicks inside. Famously, wildlife photographer Eric Hoskins lost an eye while trying to photograph a tawny nest. And today, those embarking on ringing the owls wear crash helmets and goggles. As I've said previously, folk in this country just didn't like owls. Scary creatures of the night, bringers of doom and death. But over the decades, one sure way to kill an owl was to take advantage of its amazing ability to rotate its neck to extraordinary degrees. And it was believed that if you walked round a tree that an owl was perched in, it would follow you with its eyes around and around and around till it wrung its own neck. Absolute nonsense, of course, but a magical bird. And watch out for your goldfish.
The tawny owl, harbinger of doom and goldfish killer.
Yeah. Another major production. We go back to something that got it right. It was Isabel Madden who you read out. Mm-hmm. She's up early. You usually feature my dreams. That's a bit scary.
Really?
Because at long last we're having a village event. Dartmoor plant sale, it's an advert. And we have the Strathcarran Hospice outside the village hall. 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock. Plants are stunning. Jams, jellies, chutneys, pickles and cordial. Be there or be square. Well done.
See, Isabel, we would love to read that out, but producer guidelines specifically prohibit us from doing anything of the kind. Anne in Edinburgh says, the botanics have been a lifeline during the pandemic for me and my husband. Simon Mill's absolutely right about the brain and the benefits of green spaces. The gardens are a place of solace. Love the show. Margot says, my favourite poem of a lockdown is Leisure by W.H. Davis. I don't know that one. I'll look it out. Sort of sums up what Simon Moore was trying to say, and it's my mantra when out and about in the countryside. Great radio and thanks. And Feebird, the scented forager, says, forage one thing a day, smell a flower. On my islands, my kind to me time is when I go seaweeding and breathe.
Yeah, special in the beach than at Luskintyre.
Yeah, no, too straight. That would be great. We've spent the programme discussing how spending time in the outdoors can offer benefits to our mental health and well-being. So we're going to leave you now with a soothing soundscape recorded in Shetland by Helen Moncrief. She captured this at dawn, and the sounds of the sea and a particular species of duck. Frankly, I would just you're going to smile.
I'm on the edge, just along the coast of Wastful, which is a big sandy bay. We the bits of seaweed in it to kelp forest as it stretches out past Tessumbrahead, and it's a rocky shore just for a bit along the coast. But being a shallow sandy bay, it's really good for sea ducks. So there's a bunch of dunters and kalus out here. That's eider ducks and long-tailed ducks. And there's a mallard to swim by too. I think I can see two great northern divers, so listen out for them. And then there's mallees just along the shore, and perched in under rocks, having a good preen, is some purple sandpipers and turnstones. And this bird's the sea ducks, the long-tailed ducks, sorry, they're just gathering, getting ready to go to their breeding grounds in the north. So I'll let you hear them. There's 7 male dunters and maybe 9 females. The females are this lovely rich brown colour, and then the males are black and white and sort of peachy wee, sort of greenish smudge on them. A couple are having a pretty fight in there. And then just a hint down is the long-tailed ducks, it's the kalus. And Slick Fox said that it had a good bit of gossip. Oh, really? Here's the long-tailed ducks. Are quite active and they've been feeding and displaying, and then they're moving it into the middle of the bay a bit more. I would say there's 3 groups, so about 30, 40 in each one, and they're all kind of moving in to be central together, so I wonder if there's food that they're finding or something. It's quite interesting. And then there's a bunch of dunters doing a bit close to me. Some of them are getting out on the rocks now and they're tossing their heads around as they're displaying.
Helen Moncrief there, up in Shetland, the high priestess of nature calm and matching nail polish.
We should have that as a soundtrack, for as a sting almost. You know, you're listening to BBC Radio Scotland, it's out of doors.
Ooh.
Yeah. Hey, we've got a comment flooded in from Amanda. Said, last time I texted about wild swimming, I got a surprise phone call from my dad asking if I'd been right in thinking he'd just heard my message. Until then, I had no idea he was a listener. He's in hospital at the moment, so won't be listening, but we'll get him on catch-up. Today's programme will surely cheer him up. Oh, apart from the fact, Amanda, you forgot to tell him his name, but Amanda's dad get well soon.
Yeah, quick recovery to you. And we also got correct answers in from Richard Mandy in Exeter, Helen Swan in South Devon, who says, if today's mystery bird isn't a tawny owl, probably a female, I'll eat my sun hat. Steady now. Shirley Kincraig, Chrissy Danglesey, Derek IV, David Wallace from White Craigs, they all got it right.
Yeah, you're not going to need your sun hat anyway.
No, exactly, not round here. Don't forget the Scotland Outdoors podcast at noon today, and look out for the midweek podcast, which this week features geologist Katie Strang. Until then, thanks for listening.